Oh, good.
Could somebody else moderate, since Aisha isn't here?
Okay, I'll do it.
So we're going to talk about our outlines for the bid review, right? I think that's what I'm looking back at my minutes here. I think that's what we said we would talk about, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see Aisha's have been posted on Blackboard. I haven't posted mine yet, but I have them ready to post. So do you want to just kind of go through what we have, kind of a quick outline so we have a sense of how we are approaching this? How do you want to do this?
Can I ask a question? I was going to post also on Blackboard, and I saw where Aisha's was, but I don't know how to add to hers, and I didn't want to mess hers up because I wanted to add it, like, in her folder. I know how to add. If I wanted to create a new item, I could do that, but I didn't know how to add to hers.
Oh, so we have one document?
It's a folder with her document in it.
Oh.
It's actually just a doc. You can go into the folder and add another document to it. See what I mean?
Oh, it sounds good in theory, huh?
Well, the top, like, you see on the top right corner where it says edit mode, does yours say on or off?
I could go in there and go to edit.
Okay.
I just right clicked on it though. I right clicked on the arrow and it said it was in edit.
Oh no! If you don't click, oh, I see what you want to do. You want to put it in the same place.
I didn't want to give it a new title or anything. I just wanted to add to that.
The arrows where it says reason you got p-values draft 1, and there's little arrows, right?
I'm actually not in there yet, but go ahead.
Okay.
I'm bringing it up right now.
So you can add another document in there if you click on edit, and then you just go to the bottom and just attach another file.
Okay. Yep. So do we want to do that now so that we can see each other's or not?
I don't have a document. Still maybe three-quarters of the way through my reviewing all the literature. So I've been going through every single one. And but I am noticing patterns. So I don't know if – that was one of my questions, actually, is do we want to have every single article cited?
Do you mean everyone that was in the map?
Yeah, because I have a really general topic, which is just statistical reasoning, and there's plenty of articles about it. Never mind, I don't have that question anymore. I know what I'm going to do. But I haven't finished reading all the articles, so. But I can verbally say what I've noticed for that.
Georgette, I have her document open, and it says reasoning about p-values draft 1, and there's arrows next to that. You're saying click on that?
On that and select edit.
Edit, yep.
Did you get the editing screen?
It's getting there, yes.
Okay, scroll down and to the second major section, it says attach
just file. Just attach there.
Yeah, oh, Nirasso just did hers. Yeah.
Okay. All right, got it.
I'm expecting that there will be quite a bit of overlap in some of the things. I just looked at Aisha's and I can see some things that, not too much, and I kind of expect that. Otherwise, we're in trouble if there's no relationship between sections.
Okay, so mine's there now. It says literature review common errors. I did a spreadsheet, and I listed, mine was common errors, so it was pretty easy as far as, you know, here are the errors. And then I grouped articles. Like what I did is like Georgette, what you said is go through each article. And I was looking, obviously, specifically for the common errors, and then I just kind of made notes in the right-hand column about, each of those. And so they're listed by error and then by the articles that address that error. And anything that I included that was like in a different color was just, we had not, that article was not necessarily listed in our concept map, but it was referred to in another article, and I thought that I needed to go back in and look at that article again.
Oh, here it is.
Let me see yours. I mean, I don't think my outline was exhaustive. I mean, I think there's some articles that still contain some information that
yeah.
other people, you know, so, which is why I was going through all of them. But I see.
Well, the outline that you did, Georgette, was so helpful. And thank you for doing that. That must have taken you so long to do that. I didn't know if we wanted to go into, for example, I was reading one article, now it's referencing another article that I don't think that we looked at. So do we then go into that article? I'm thinking yes, that's what we wanted to do. And those are the things that I put in different colors that I have just made notes to myself that I have to go back and look at those articles too. What was really neat to see is that there's so much out there. Well, so much yet so little, so much as far as the issues that we're seeing in our students' responses and their misinterpretations, they are definitely documented here. What the SOTOS article that was a summary of common errors along with other things really pointed out is that there's really not a lot of data out there on these misconceptions. And I included that in my what's missing section or implications for future research.
I just have a question. And was that the SOTA or who was that again?
SOTO.
Oh, Alejandra?
It was actually, I have it right here, hang on. It was Anna Elisa.
SOTO, okay.
SOTO. And then a Van Hoof and a Nortgate.
Right.
And it was from 2007. Six.
Yeah, their stuff is pretty recent.
And it gave an overview of amongst other things, common errors.
Yep. Okay.
So when we read something like that, are we like it's an overview of the literature? It is a literature review. So when we're reading a literature review, we don't want to quote from that, right? I mean, we don't want to use that article as something referenced in that article. We want to go back to the original article. Is that correct?
I think we can do both. I mean, okay. if we can get a hold of the original articles, that would be great to be able to read it for ourselves and not how the author of that article interprets the original. But we can also, if there's something in how they write about it and what they say about it that's useful for us, we can quote that too.
I think if I can just, I think that's what you want to do is if it's a review article, a review of literature article, or you're pulling stuff from that review, then it would be. Legitimate to say SOTO et al. In reviewing the research on such and such, note that, something like that. But if you want to say something specifically from one of those articles, then you may not want to take their word from it. You might want to actually get that article and make sure that what they were saying or what you would want to say is actually consistent with the article. But I don't think you need to get every article. I think you want to be selective. Articles that really are, it's something that you really want to say, so you want to make sure you're saying it right. Or there's a research methodology that that they describe briefly and you're really curious about that or think that might be useful. the way they ask questions, the review article doesn't really tell you, but you've got an inkling that that might be useful, something like that.
This is probably a stupid question, but I've never written an article before, and so what I'm picturing here for this, the literature review, is that section in the paper that we're going to write. Is that right? Where we're going to do the literature review, or is this a separate thing we're going to publish? Or is it just for JSM?
It's difficult to publish a literature review.
Okay.
You typically can't just publish a literature review, what you would think of as the front part of an article.
Right.
There would have to be something you were doing, like a review of the literature, and then you're actually it has to offer something to the discipline that hasn't quite been there before. You know, it can be a small contribution. So if in reviewing the literature there's certain themes that come out and they have suggestions for, you know, research or for what students' problems are, and you think that that's adding something new,
mm-hmm.
That's great. But one of the problems is, as I see as an editor, is so somebody sends me that, and then I go, well, then you should do the research and tell us what you find when you actually conduct this type of research.
So then this is the section that we're going to start with and then describe our research results?
That could very well be what it's going to be.
Okay.
It's more like a rationale for why we're doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like this is what's out there. This is what has been said. So based on this is what we're doing to kind of add to that.
But at the dinner on Monday night, and Jennifer, you're the only person coming from your group, right?
No,
Narazzo is going to be there too.
Yep.
Excuse me. So both of you will be there, and there's going to be a member from each of the past groups, the previous research clusters. There were three groups.
Uh-huh.
And I think Jennifer Kaplan's going to be there. She's got an article published in, which I think you guys have probably read, I think in Journal of Statistics Education on lexical ambiguity.
Yep.
Did that just come out?
Maybe it just came out, and I'd have to look at it in detail, but I think that they sent that in before I think they had some preliminary data. So it wasn't the full research study that they wanted to do. I'm thinking that it might represent an example of what you could do after towards the end of the first year or into your second year with what you've done. You guys are gathering some data,
mm-hmm.
and there might be something to write about. And if there is, you would need this literature review as a preamble to it all, just as Narazzo said, to justify why you're thinking the way you're thinking and why you did what you did. And if not, it's still a good exercise for when you finally do have your final set of data and analyses that you want to get out to the big wide world. So does that help, Georgette, at all?
Very much. Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
So I've posted mine on there, but basically what I started off by it's kind of hard to know where to start because I didn't have anybody else's to see what has already been covered. So I kind of just looked at what's the significance of p-values, why are we even looking at them, and looked at articles that kind of talked about why it's important that we understand them. And then my next bullet was looking at, okay, so how best do we teach these things? And I look first generally at what good teaching looks like, pulling from that how people learn. I don't know if that's an article or more of a book.
Mm-hmm.
And then more specifically in learning statistical concepts. So I looked at what themes or what were some commonalities in what was suggested as ways of teaching statistics. Looking, trying to get, some of them were not specifically p-values, but other concepts. So I just kind of listed some of those articles and what they suggested, and then some of them I put my thoughts on their suggestions. The last part would be, okay, so now that we have this information of what works, how can we take what we've learned and figure out how to teach for our purposes p-value? So that's kind of, I feel like that's where we go. That's the whole point. So we can say, well, okay, so now we know what other people have suggested and we can take something and sort of how should we do it? How, what can we take from that to our own classrooms? What can we suggest a model from? What can we take from what we've read to guide our teachers? So that's kind of what my outline looks like.
What I'm in the middle of doing is I just have a pile of index cards. Starting from the very first, not the very first article we read, because there was really nothing in those first two articles that we read through the book. But starting after that, for the second call and moving to the present, any kind of discussion about what is statistical reasoning and how it differentiates. I know we had this conversation ourselves, but how is it different from statistical thinking? How is it different from mathematical reasoning? So it's very general, and which was what I understood my section to be, but I'm not sure how it's all going to tie together.
Well, I see that as kind of like the broader picture. Like, this is where statistics education reform is going, away from procedural thinking and that sort of, just computation to understanding what you do and thinking statistically. So that's kind of like, this is why we're starting to think this way, because this is where we're going. And now we're focusing in on reasoning about p-values specifically. And here are some common errors that people make, and here are some suggestions on how to correct those in our teaching. And based on that, this is how we suggest. Here's another suggestion of how we might keep doing better in helping our students understand this.
So that sounds like it'll flow.
It flows in my head.
I can, mine too.
Me too.
I think the map that you have, that you did, Georgette, makes it clear for me. Like, okay, so this is, broadly, this is what we're looking at. We're looking at being able to think, being able to reason and speak the language. And then now we're focusing on, we just want to talk about this little piece of it. Just look at p-value. So, it makes sense to me.
Okay.
Guys, I got a question. You guys are posting this up like on a Google Doc or something like that?
Blackboard.
Blackboard. I don't know that I need access to it. But it might be nice if I could look, it would let me answer questions when I have them, look over things. Is it okay for me to have access to it?
Please, I'll ask them to add you tomorrow.
And then do you need to send me some information about accessing it, Georgette?
Yeah. They'll give you, a name and access code.
Okay.
It's just Blackboard.
But that's okay with everybody?
Yeah, that's fun.
Okay, thanks. And then I got another question.
Some of the things that we talk about, Bob, before.
Okay. Very good. How many students have you guys gathered data from at this point? Roughly.
I want to say like 80.
I think it's
remember having
more than that. It's like a. Hang on, let me find it. Let me go into it's.
Three classes in the fall, two in the spring, right?
But
so,
it's listed on the Blackboard.
It is on Blackboard somewhere.
If you guys are still on Blackboard, it would be the results from the pilot study. The percentages are on the slides that I sent you guys, but the numbers aren't.
I think it's about 80 or something like that, or at least 80.
That's great. I mean, you guys have a, you know, I'm just thinking you guys have a good bit of information.
Well, when we ran it again in the spring, I think that we didn't find any new themes.
Right.
You know, pretty much, just, we maybe had some new quotes, but not.
Yeah. So that's, you know, I think it would be good. I don't know if you guys are writing a methodology section yet, but it might be a good idea to keep track of that if you haven't, that you've got this process that you've used to develop the themes. And so you need, I think you guys have written about this already, but if you haven't, you need to write about what you did after you got the first set from the fall. And then the second set is acting like a validation data set. You looked at that and you're not seeing new themes. You've got new variations on the themes, but you're not seeing new themes. So that kind of is evidence that validates the coding scheme that you've developed.
Yay. Yeah.
And that's part of your methodology.
Right.
Okay. And part of your, you know, part of it's your results. You didn't find any differences. Here's what the categories are, but it's also part of your methodology. And you want to, I have too many times in my life forgotten what we did in enough, you know, enough detail that I can't describe it in detail anymore. So it's good to do it while you can still remember it.
Okay.
So our literature review would really be the beginning part, like the background or rationale. Then we go into methodology. Then we go into results. Then we go into the that's looking further down.
If you're looking for this full research paper, yeah. A lot of times there's kind of an introduction that kind of sets up why you're interested in this problem a little bit, or what the problem is a little bit, maybe with a few references, and then you go into a review of the literature. That's really what you're talking about now. But, yeah, you should be documenting almost everything that you're doing, not just the literature review, but you guys gather data. So you should be documenting, you know, whose classes, what terms, anything about that whole thing, including that, Jennifer, you didn't have IRB approval for something, right?
In the, right.
Yeah. You know, just all these little... even the little things, you want to be able to write clearly and truthfully about all of it when it comes down to the final thing.
So do you need it? We put all of our data together.
Mm-hmm.
Does it need just, you mean a general statement of these classes were for this semester, these classes, that has to be in there too?
If you're not going, so as far as your data goes, if you don't have a reason to disaggregate it and look at differences across the institutions or classes, there's nothing, you know, so you put your data together. I don't know when you put your data together, if you have some type of variable that identifies where the data came from.
Yeah.
Well, then you've got that. But, yeah, I think you want, part of your methodology is saying you're from four different institutions. I can't remember if all four of you gathered data. I know you have different situations going on, but if you did, part of your methodology is going to be some brief statements, should be some brief statements about the characteristics of each of those institutions.
Okay.
And you might start overboard and then pare it back, but I think that's important.
Right.
Yeah, I do too, especially when from Aisha's school, I believe she teaches... Doesn't she teach math science students?
Yeah, the some of them already have AP stats.
Got it.
Yeah.
And they might be going into STEM majors or something like that, whereas other people are, you know, like our IntroStat course here is just really a real gen ed course, and
mm-hmm.
it's every major under the sun, but not the STEM majors. You know, they're not going into math, physics, chemical engineering, or something like that. So I think that's important because, especially if you find similarities in the types of themes, you know, you have similar numbers of students, or at least you have students from each of those different settings, showing some of the same errors, some of the same problems, showing some of the same reasoning, the diversity across your institutions kind of supports that this is something real, probably, that you're finding. It's not just particular to a certain type of student.
So is that a plus or a minus that we're taking for very different schools?
It could be a plus.
Well, it is what it is. So we can't right now. We're not going to change that. We can't change that. But I didn't know if we should do it both ways. Should we look at the percentages within each institution and look at the total percentages?
I see. I think you need to look at that.
Okay.
And I think if you write about this and about the differences, and then when you're finally writing up the research and you don't say we looked to see if there were any differences across institutions, an editor is going to come back at you, or a reviewer is going to come back to you, or a reader is going to come back to you and say, well, were there any differences?
Yeah.
Because these sound like potentially four different populations.
Definitely four different instructors, too. So
that's right.
Be a separate section, maybe? You know, we talk about the different institutions, but also the different instructors? Backgrounds? For example, I don't have a degree in statistics.
So where that might come in, Georgette and everybody, is then if you guys settle on a common approach that you're all going to implement in your courses, let's say, it goes that way, and then you get similar results. So I'm really pie in the sky here, but you get similar results as an outcome from that. Then you've got a pedagogical approach that doesn't depend on the fact that Georgette doesn't have a PhD in statistics, or whatever the differences are among you. You were all able to implement that approach to the same effect. So
okay.
that's a positive to me, too. Now, I don't know if it's all going to play out that way or exactly what you guys are going to end up doing, but those are some of the ways you could – I hate to use the word spin, but in a sense you kind of spin it. You tell your story.
And I think, Georgette, that having a PhD in statistics is not necessary to teach what we're teaching and to teach it well. I mean, there's difference between, you know, what degree someone has and if students are understanding it. There's so many different variables there. I would say that the degree itself is not the most important.
I don't want to eat up all your time, but I was just having a conversation with a bunch of statisticians, stat educators this weekend where I was. And one thing that came up was it's not that we don't think somebody who has a degree in mathematics cannot teach statistics. We would just like to see them recognize that they may not know how to teach statistics and that might be something they need to learn. You know, if you can follow the gist of that. So that openness to that, this is not your domain and you might have some things new to learn. Is what we'd like to see, and you guys all strike me that way. So, not as the arrogant type, as the people who are open to learning.
I don't think any of us have a PhD in math. No, maybe Aisha does, but she's open.
Yeah, my degree's not in statistics at all.
Right.
It's in math education.
See, but that puts you in a much better place, in many of our opinions, than the person with the math degree. And Raza, what's your?
Mine is in business and in education.
Well, are you in education? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But is Aisha? Is she kind of like psychology or some area of psychology or what?
I think she's statistics. She is
statistics. Okay.
Yeah,
she's a PhD in statistics.
Okay. Okay. See how much I
think
know?
That's why you put the four of us together, because we got it all.
You seem to have similar interests, and you seem to get along, you know, work well, or didn't tell us that you didn't think you would. And then I think it's just turned out that you guys got a lot of good complementary skills to bring to the table. All right, that's enough. I've eaten up some of your time, so please get back to what you need to talk about there.
Okay.
Well, I'm thinking about what we were just talking about as far as different writing the methodology section, and I don't know if we want to branch off on this right now or go back to our literature, but just for a minute to answer some questions that I have, is for our next meeting, we probably are going to want to really solidify how we're going to start our first day process. You know, like we talked last time about doing a pre-test, post-test, or doing a pre-test, and maybe we just want to think about, do we want to look at a common way of teaching what we're going to teach? Should everything be as consistent as possible in how we administer everything? I know to this point we've kind of been doing it in the pilot study as however it was going to work within our institutions, but I don't know if when we do our actual study in the fall, it has to be more as similar as possible.
I'll just jump in and say, I think you need to take in local considerations. What works with your students, the way you're doing your class. You guys are not teaching identical classes, and you know that. But as you think about, so there's probably going to be some variations that have to happen. One of you is going to do it right on the first day. Another person, it doesn't make sense until the second, you know, the first day of the second week or something. Do we really think that'll make a difference? 1 day of instruction or you know, 3 days of instruction as far as getting the pretest? And I think you need to ask yourself that question and discuss it among yourselves and think about, you know, why would it make a difference or how might it make a difference? But if you kind of come to the conclusion, nah, that's probably not enough into the course to be affecting their understanding of these particular items, then you go with that decision. You know, some people are going to do it on the first day, some people are going to do it on the second day, whatever. If you do that, though, then that's the type of thing you need to document. Who did what? You need to have that documented so that you can actually take a look and see, is there anything indicating that it did make a difference? More than likely, you'll come up with, no, it didn't. And so then you just don't separate upon, you know, by groups and by your different institutions because it doesn't seem to be related to the outcomes.
So if we, let's say we did the pretest the first day, but then there were students that were missing because they added the class on late, or maybe now you have people that drop the class for whatever reason. They would be coded, so they would be identified, and then we would throw them out, add them in, and list them as different? Or
yep, I think that's a good – what you're saying basically is a good plan.
Okay.
You want to track the people who – that's going to be a minority of people, I assume, and you want to track them, and you want to see, is there any reason to think that they look any different than anybody else? Say, like on their pretest responses or, you know, whatever.
Good question.
Maybe
in the meantime, what we can do is each of us write, you know, like characteristics of our classes, you know, for the methodology of what we did for the pilot. Talk about what the class looks like. And we kind of have that because one of the questions that we had the gender and how many years of stats they've had and the sophomore, freshman or whatever. So we kind of have that information already. But we can kind of describe it for our institutions and what it looks like. So when we do the methodology, we can see. We might find that they're not, you know, there's some similarities or there's some really big differences. And then we can see, and it looks like the responses that came out of them from, you know, as far as I can tell, are very similar, the way the students responded to some of these questions. So based on that, it looks like it didn't make a difference, the fact that we're from different institutions. But it would be good to kind of have somebody reading it can get a picture of who are the students and what do the institutions look like and exactly what do we do. So maybe we can write a little section, then you can send it to me since I guess I'm the synthesizer of this. I can put it together to have one methodology section.
Okay.
That incorporates information from all four of us.
So you want us? You want to do that for August?
Yeah, because Bob is right. I'm already starting to forget exactly what I did. for the pilot.
Yeah.
While we're still remembering it, so we can put that together, and maybe from there we can see how our next step for the actual study, like how similar does it have to be? Does it seem to really make a big difference? Because we gave that pilot a different time. So, and it doesn't seem to have, as far as their responses, it doesn't seem to have made a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
But that might be a place for us to start, and we can see just where are our differences, and if we're trying to make ourselves similar, where would those areas be?
That's a good suggestion.
Are we giving the questionnaire in the fall to the same classes that we did last year? For example, I teach Math 151, which is Statistics 1 for business and math majors and science majors, and I've been consistently giving it to that course. Are there different courses that you guys teach? Because there's another stats course that's for liberal arts majors that I do not give this to. I could. I think we get quite different results, but
now I'm really having to think about this because my load has changed. So my undergraduate class that I was giving this to, I'm no longer teaching that class. So I'm really having to figure out which would, what will be my group.
Okay.
Because the classes that I'm teaching now are graduate classes. So I don't know if we want to give it to graduate students. It's graduate students who are in an intro type stats class. So as far as the content, the concepts that they learn, they're not very different because they haven't had a stats class either.
I'm expecting you'll see some good similarities between the responses of the graduate students and the undergraduates, given what you just described. Georgette, and then what's the nature of your students?
Oh, I teach the same thing every semester. So it's their business, it's introduction to business statistics.
Okay, so you and Jennifer both have business intro to business statistics courses. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mine's in the math department. It's for math, business, and science majors.
Okay. And then what about Aisha's students? You guys have a sense of...
I don't remember.
I think there's a
class that she teaches that people who are stats majors, I believe. But I think there's also a class she teaches where there are majors in other areas and she kind of services other departments.
Yep. Well, I know Beth Chance has told us on a couple occasions they have statistics majors at Cal Poly. And they try to do exit interviews with them when they're graduating. And they sometimes what they do is they have them work on problems. And it's pretty common that they still seem to have misunderstandings, even though they were statistics majors, misunderstandings about things that you would think, God, you just have to know this. Some of these misconceptions are stubborn and pervasive. Jennifer, I was just to throw my two cents worth again, I think seem to be doing that a lot on this conversation. If it doesn't take you a whole lot of time and energy, it might be interesting to get responses from that liberal arts group just for comparison. You can always not use the data if you decide that group is so different than the rest of the students in the study.
Well, the largest difference is that the students coming into the liberal arts course, the prerequisite is intermediate algebra, but the prerequisite for this other course I'm using is pre-calculus.
Right.
So
that might be interesting to see if that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And the language that we use in that other class is not as detailed. I mean, I don't want to get into it here, but...
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a survey course for stats, and
it's kind of a statistical literacy type of course.
Well, I'm thinking that maybe we might get it into, yeah, we're going to try to work that in. There's a session I'm going to go to at JSM about
good.
Statistical literacy as, on its own course, as its own
mm-hmm.
course, and I'm
mm-hmm.
thinking,
there's kind of
turning.
There's this little bit of talk of this kind of statistical literacy course and then kind of the introductory stat course and then something that's in between, a little blend of both. So there's kind of three flavors of intro courses out there that are being thought about. So that sounds good that, you know, that you're going to be there and be able to attend that. Hopefully you'll get some good information. But do you think the language of your items, the items that you guys have now, do you think that that wouldn't be accessible to this liberal arts group because of the language that's used, you know, that is or isn't used in the course?
The language is used. It's not stressed as much because we're doing other things in the course. We're including regression and correlation and, it could work, but I'd have to think about it.
So it'd be, so like Monrazo said, I think, you know, it could be interesting to see.
Yeah.
What do you get when you've got these two different groups of students and arguably two different courses? Do you get some of the same thing or is it really noticeably different?
And we don't want to use our second stat course students for this. Is that correct? Like, I'm not...
That's among you guys. That,
okay.
The answer to that one's among you guys.
Mine is really applied, a very applied approach, so we don't really even do hypothesis testing as a tool, you know? I mean, we interpret p-values, but not in the sense that the instrument is discussing it. You see what I'm saying? So I'm not sure that I'm not sure that mine, because it's just the straight linear regression course. We don't even review hypothesis testing.
My thoughts are whoever we can get our hands on, we can, you know, like Bob says, we don't have to use the data, but at least it's better to have it and not use it than wish we had it. So if you have access and it's not too much of a problem, then we can just gather data and interesting questions can come out of it. Like, do we need to have our students take some other a literacy class before they get into these other classes? Because is there a difference? Or does it really matter that they've been in, this is their second class, or do they still have the same kind of misconceptions that the people taking for the first time have? So what do we need to do differently? So, it might make for interesting discussion, I think. But if we decide we don't want to use it, then we just don't use it, but we have it.
Okay. I didn't know if that was making it too broad, you know, like if we're focusing on, if we don't want to use it, we can just throw it away.
So you know you can describe some of the differences between those groups, Jennifer. You've already done it, and you guys can describe differences between the students in your different populations. So you know there's differences. And I think what Narazo was hitting on, that might be interesting. And you might see differences in responses, and you might be able to kind of arguably link it to the differences. Yet again, you might see very few differences, and that would be interesting. Doesn't matter whether they got the pre-calc or the intermediate algebra background, you still see the same type of reasoning and thinking and misunderstandings.
Okay.
It strikes me that you have some items now that are working for you. They're giving you some useful information, and now you can go, you can use them to see kind of what the lay of the land is, in a sense. You guys had brought up, so I think, Jennifer, you brought up, this fall, are you guys thinking that you're all going to try a certain type of pedagogical approach? Have you?
That's the plan.
Okay. I mean, have you actually, I know it's getting close for me when fall semester starts. Have you guys already laid this out or think you know what you're going to do?
We haven't really talked about that.
No, not at all.
We talked about it a little bit last time.
Yeah. That's tricky because, you know, our students have different needs. So it's kind of tricky to make it uniform in terms of how we approach this.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes you can say, here's what are going to be, these are the main characteristics of this pedagogical approach. Nothing's coming to mind, but, you know, here they are. And so, but we have to adapt it to each of the situations. As long as everybody recognizes, when everybody looks at each person's plan, you see those same critical elements there, then, you know, you could argue it's the same approach with adaptations, and then you're testing that, you know, in a sense you're testing that out. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking of the reading that I was doing, looking at the pedagogy part of the lit review, that there's some elements that kind of come up in all the different suggestions that have been made. So maybe we can pick those. I mean, for instance, almost everybody wants to suggest doing some sort of, you know, using technology to do some sort of simulation so you can illustrate the concept. And they also talk about, you know, experiencing rather than just learning how to do, you know, the steps.
Yep. So
maybe we can pick two or three of those and make sure that we incorporate those in our teaching, and we can say those are the elements that we're focusing on and those are the elements that we want to be similar on. And then because the activity can be a little bit different, we can tailor those to our classes.
And I was just thinking with that example that you're giving, some type of simulation, it could be that one of you is using Minitab, and if you've got the characteristics of the simulation laid out, what it's supposed to do, what students are supposed to do with it, but one of you writes it up in Minitab, another one uses an applet that they found, and so on and so forth, as long as it's essentially doing the same thing for the simulation, you know, arguably that's what you want.
Right. Well, Rustin and Chance have all those really great tools, you know, so I mean, maybe we could just all use the same one because, I mean, they're available and they're already set up, you know, good, well, to, I don't know, would that, what do you think?
I already used one of theirs, the helper hinderer one, to kind of get at, you know, the p-value. So that would be, I mean, I already used that, so that would be, and that seems easy to kind of adapt to illustrate more than one concept. But, you know, you can illustrate the p-value pretty easily because you can actually see how many out of 16 babies, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So what I want to emphasize is that, so what you could do is you could just say, we're all going to use a simulation that's going to get at p-values. And that, to me, doesn't give enough detail for you guys to be doing something similar at each of your institutions. I think it'd be better if you can say, it has to be a simulation that does A, B, C, D, E, and F. And now if the helper-hinderer simulation fits that, then that's what you, you know, then you can go with that. But if Jennifer, for example, wanted to program in Minitab or Aisha in R or something like that, basically the same thing, you guys would know what A, B, C, D, E, and F are, and so you should be able to create similar experiences for your students. I guess what I'm thinking is, I don't know that Aisha uses R, but if I use R, and what I really want to do is give my students as much experience with R as I can, so that I want to do it in R, then I would have that flexibility. But I would have to make sure, and you guys would have to agree if I was part of the, you know, this, that what I was doing really had A, B, C, D, and F going on in it. And more than likely the helper or hinderer one does. I mean, I know it well. I think it's a really good one for that. So I'm not trying to say don't do helper or hinderer, but I'm trying to get you to think about what are the characteristics of the pedagogy. Why do you think it will affect the student's understanding the way you think it's going to affect it? And so you spell out those characteristics of the pedagogy.
Yeah.
Now, you were mentioning simulation just as an example.
Right.
C-value, or we're saying that we want an activity, or it could be anything along those lines. Computers, because computers were listed a lot in the literature narrative.
Yeah. So, I was just saying, if we're trying to find, to make our styles or whatever, you know, similar, we could look at what are similar in what areas. And I was just commenting that in the reading, even though they were suggesting different things, different approaches, there were some commonalities. So something like that, we could find, okay, what are things that we want, whatever we're doing, to include? Mm-hmm. Do we want it to have a hands-on kind of activity, or we want them to have this kind of experience, however we make that happen. But, you know, it should have those elements. So
Just a thought that might even be easier than that. I mean, I do like the computer one a lot, and I'd love to find an applet or something that we could all use. But just to make sure I'm understanding this, years ago I was at a conference with Roxy Peck, and she did and I'm sure you guys have seen this one, where it's she loads a deck of cards, so they're either all red or all black, and she uses that activity as an introduction to hypothesis testing. And it really, I think, it really gets the idea of the hypotheses. What are the hypotheses? You know, the half of this deck is red, and the alternative is that it's not. And the students actually draw cards, and they see, oh, I'm not getting any black cards, or I'm not getting any red cards. And, you know, are you sure or are you not sure? And it's really such a great activity. I've been using it every semester, myself and some of our colleagues. And I think if we maybe even did either a simulation on the computer or something even maybe simpler, or like an activity like that, that might help to, I don't know.
Yeah.
So you guys, from your literature review, you just talked about it today, you know things about what, Narazo, you were saying, you have articles on what statisticians are saying constitutes an understanding of p-value, for example.
Right.
Why it's important to learn it, and then kind of what that understanding involves, and then other articles about difficulties or good ways to teach it. So there's some ideas there. Jennifer was looking at errors, and you guys are looking at different things. So you must be coming to a point where you can start saying, well, here's what constitutes an understanding of p-value. Therefore, the learning goals or learning outcomes are, and if those are the learning outcomes, then here's what there's not just one activity, but here are the things that we need them to understand, and here's a set of activities that we think will address either one of those or a couple of those learning outcomes together.
And then do we take it a step further and say, okay, these are the activities that we think will help, and we actually did those with our class?
Well, then I think you guys are hopefully coming to some consensus of here's what we're all going to do.
Okay.
Might with maybe little variations, but you need to consider if one of you is doing that set plus a few other things all related to understanding p-value, and then another one of you is doing this set except for one of the things, you know, one's kind of under-teaching and the other one's over-teaching, are you going to get a clear read on the effects of this instruction? So you, if you're really setting it up for kind of a teaching experiment across the different institutions, you want to try to have pretty good fidelity to this part of your course, where you're not teaching exactly identical ways, but more or less you are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I brought up the question, are you guys going to be, I was kind of questioning, are you, this is a good idea, but are you going to be ready to do that this fall?
Right.
And you might be. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some conversations that I expect need to happen.
Well, I have 358.
Yes.
I have 258.
I have 1258.
There you go.
So can we decide when we're going to speak next?
No, Aisha spends some time at work, so. Oh, actually, she sent the ones that wouldn't work. Okay. When do we want to do this? And then I'll just go back and look at Aisha's date, come up with a date that will work for her.
When do people's classes start? Mine are starting the August 30th.
I start in September, but I'm teaching right now, so, you know.
Okay.
I live here anyway, so. But today's the 28th, so probably towards the end of August.
How about August 24th? What? Because that's the day Aisha is free. How is everybody else's schedule?
I wouldn't be free till late that evening.
Oh, okay. That doesn't work?
After 4 o'clock.
Wednesday and Friday, her afternoons are free. What about Wednesday the 25th or Friday? In the afternoon.
What time on Wednesday were you thinking?
I can't do Wednesday.
You can't do Wednesday?
Mm-mm, I can't. That's our first week, and we have meetings all that week.
Oh.
We start classes at 30th. The 27th, is that an option?
We can do it the week before, because Aisha's free all that week before also, so we don't have to do it that week.
That might be better the week before.
How about you, Nira? So does that work for you?
Be the week of the 16th.
Oh, yeah. That'll work.
Any day better than another, Niratu?
Not really, no.
Okay.
I'm wide open, so I got lots of free time. It looks like Aisha's is pretty open, too. So, Jonathan, what's your week like?
It's fine, except for Monday morning.
Why don't we do it Thursday?
Okay, the 19th?
Mm-hmm.
What time?
Would 2 o'clock be too early for you, Aisha? I mean, Niavaso?
That'll be 11, my time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do it later.
That's fine. 11 is fine.
Okay, so 2 Eastern time.
August 19th.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Guys, I got to run.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, thank you, guys. I think I interjected a little more than usual, but I think you guys are in a good place here. All right, talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bob, what's the role? Next week. Do we just go down one? I'm not sure how we've been doing.
Oh, yeah, we just, let's see.
I'm not sure either.
So I've been the recorder, so I would be the organizer. And then, Yadasa was a synthesizer, so she would be the recorder, et cetera.
Right, so, yes.
Okay.
So Aisha is the synthesizer, Jennifer is the moderator, and I'm the recorder, and you're the organizer.
Okay. All right, ladies.
Do you guys know what to press to stop the recording, or do you just?
I think it's the same button to record.
So the star two. Okay.
Okay. Have a great month, and I'll get the minutes out pretty soon this afternoon.
Okay. Enjoy the rest of your summer, and I'll see you in D.C., Jennifer.
Sounds
good.
Yeah,
guys, have fun.
Thank
or
you.
Learn a lot, I mean. Don't have fun. Learn a lot.
We'll take your notes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.